Welcome into This Has to Work. Today I am joined by Corey Anand. He is the founder of Kaya Care, a B2B mental health care platform that delivers products to support individuals in the workplace, creates leadership academy programs for leadership teams, and provides wellness tracking technology. Kaya's unique approach focuses on the intersection of an individual's well-being and their professional work, organization, or team. Welcome to the show, Corey.
It's great to be here.
So you're very welcome. The two sentences in my intro for Kaya are probably not a proper representation of the platform. Can you tell us a little bit more about what Kaya is?
Yeah, I mean, you did a great job. We think of ourselves as a mental health ecosystem for the workplace. So you think about how do we create psychological safety in the workplace by being human-centered? Changing organizational culture takes 3 to 5 years. And so we want to be the mental health pillar of an organization by providing clinician-led group training programs that's rooted in psychological safety, led by clinicians, but brings people together to create a shared language and framework for organizational change.
So I think if people hear 3 to 5 years to really affect kind of a cultural change around mental well-being and mental health within an organization, why is it so long? What takes so long for an organization to adopt some of these practices and or best practices?
Yeah, I mean, people's behaviors take time, right? That takes effort, consistency, and we all have to be rowing in the same direction. That can take a long, long time. So you think about when you start with leaders. Leaders drive culture. Culture is then promoted and supported from bottom up. And depending how large the organization takes, that takes a long time. A lot of what we hear about is, well, it's just a lot of heavy lifting. It's a lot of convincing that this is a very important piece to the organization because you also have to, you can't see it, you can't touch it, and it's not immediate. So it takes time to shift that boat.
So I'm going to say the quiet part out loud. There are hundreds, maybe, I may be exaggerating, but it feels like it, hundreds of mental health kind of solutions, tech platforms out there, but most of them are DIY kind of meditation or self-help or self-guided wellness plans. And sure, those have their place. And I think they're important in their own right. However, you guys are taking a different approach. So what is it about Kaya's approach that's novel, and why is that approach important from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, to start off, those passive e-learning kind of self-guided apps are extremely important, right? But that's one part of the equation. That is doing the inner work. It is something that you can do on your own. When we look at how do we drive change, it takes a community, it takes a village. And so when we provide that human-centered clinician training, you're creating that community. You're understanding, you're experiencing the difference when clinicians teach and provide that experiential learning around mental health. What does it mean to experience challenges in the workplace? Identifying like, hey, Matt is struggling in the workplace. How do I have that conversation? How do I have an open door policy around that? That is something that takes a live setting that you can all then, again, going back to the shared framework and a shared language within an organization, really becomes powerful.
Those other platforms too that I mentioned before, sometimes they lack, for lack of a better term, kind of, you know, scientific rigor. And I know that's really important in our conversations to date. We've talked a lot about why the kind of the science and the commitment to the science of mental health is really important to you as you build and grow Kaya. Mm-hmm. How do you ensure that your platform is evidence-based and effective? I know those are two terms that you spend a lot of time thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, first off, we're not a company that diagnoses or in a clinical setting or takes, you know, PHI when we talk to individuals. When we think about science and
explain PHI for folks.
Oh, personal health information.
Got it.
And which is important because that also lives in the benefit space. That also lives in the therapy matchmaking vendors that are that exist. So when we think about who drives Kaya, and we focus and we bring on people that live and breathe it every day. These are clinicians, LCSW, psychologists. We just brought on an international psychologist that focuses on organizational change. And that's also, I mean, they develop and design the curriculum using techniques and modalities that are effective in the workplace, and organizational psychology, which is just a fascinating concept that keeps evolving as we navigate towards the future of work, which is a big, big concept right now. And so is psychological safety.
So a lot of people listening to this podcast or watching this podcast are going to hear what you're saying, and they're going to picture, I think, a traditional view of mental health support and forget that there is a very much a technology component to what you're doing. So much so that AI is actually now a common topic in kind of mental health and corporate strategy, obviously. It's everywhere. But specifically in kind of learning and development or leadership and development and around measuring outcomes and all of those programs, that's a lot. But how is Kaya incorporating AI into its platform?
Yeah. So just to talk about the platform really quickly. So as we lead these clinician-led groups and cohorts and train on mental health, all of it, we have a tech platform where you're able to schedule and learn about the clinicians and really track your progress. We also have an element where individuals can track their individual productivity, energy, and stress and overall wellness, right? So that's the non-AI piece, but the platform that exists. As we navigate the conversation of AI and its importance, it's tremendously scary. It's this sense of urgency, whether you get on board or you're going to be lost and missed on the opportunity. When I say AI and mental health, I'm very reticent to say that in the same sentence. When we think of AI, we think, well, AI can drive the data, can provide more insights. And then we have the human-powered solution, which is the Kaya Academy, which is the psychological training, the clinician-led groups. So we now say we have AI data-driven insights, but it's powered by a human-centered solution. Our AI takes existing corporate data, the years of pulse surveys, engagement surveys, you name it, DEI data, and also a lot of the corporate strategy. We then blend that with what's going on in the world, the global data, mental health reports, workplace reports that come out from McKinsey's World Health Organization. We take that into a Gen AI system and then help a company predict where they're going 3 to 5 years from now. If you think about 2019, L&D strategies were pretty much, firm. They were looking forward. 2020 hits, the pandemic, a lot of L&D strategies went sideways. How do you navigate that type of fundamental shift in the workplace, in our human lives? That's where we can use AI to really leverage AI to inform companies. Hey, based on where you've been and where you are now, these are some of the things to look out for in the future. And it's all based on this generative AI system.
So two parts of what Kaya offers is kind of a cohort-based model, and then also the academy programs around leadership and development, learning and development. I want to kind of take those two pieces apart for just a second. Mm-hmm. When we talk about a cohort model, first of all, explain how that works, and maybe more importantly, why is a cohort model potentially more approachable for people, especially in kind of a professional or, non-personal context?
Yeah. So the cohort, the way it works is we've launched with a company recently the learning and development director said, okay, I want to bring together all VPs that are moving or upcoming VPs to come together and then train together on how to implement psychological safety. Now, psychological safety can mean a bunch of different things. We define it as a place where people can be heard, seen, and included in an inclusive environment where you can speak up and share opinions and thoughts and ideas without the fear of retaliation. So the cohort-based model really does work when all of a sudden you have these group of leaders or middle management of new hires are all starting to have that shared framework, a shared language. As you learn together, you can apply together, and that's where you see the shift. But also that's where you start building trust, is you say, hey, well, Matt and I did this program together. We both know how to then talk to our individual teams on the importance of mental health, having those conversations, but creating a place where mattering and purpose and belonging is effective.
It also seems to me that if you are in a work environment, you are naturally, structurally put into groups. Mm-hmm. And so you function as a group, you make decisions as a group, you execute as a group, you make mistakes as a group, quite mm-hmm. frankly. So this idea of being now in a group that has this shared purpose feels a little less intimidating than if you tell me as an individual, I need to go sit one-on-one with yes. somebody or have this singular experience outside of that framework. To me, that's going to feel more intimidating. Is that also part of kind of the thesis behind cohorts?
Yes, it's a collective understanding and growth together. You can have individuals, a lot of, I think, more old school L&D models is here, go take some courses on your own, self-paced, self-learning, and then go apply it. Well, if you're not all learning the same thing and you don't have the same experiences, because in these groups, not only do we do, we provide psychoeducational content, so the concepts and the techniques, we then, part of our groups are about experiential learning. So Matt, you and I may be in a breakout room in a group, or we may have a vignette we have to discuss and learn. Also, to caveat or to explain the groups is we don't talk about, you know, personal, very deep personal mental health. It's more about how do we build resilience for the future and bring people into the fold that we work with. So it is less intimidating and it's more of we're all in this together.
This is going to be a gross oversimplification, but to provide some background for listeners, the academy programs that Kaya offers are really there to address the lack of mental health awareness and support leadership teams are equipped with. And this isn't one of those, you know, situations where leaders are put into a room and they are asked to learn a skill set that is lowering risk or liability for the company and probably don't get much out of it. In your experience and from what you've shared with me before, managers want this. They're not feeling equipped. They're not feeling ready. And in a lot of ways, they don't feel like they're serving their teams as well as they could. And now, while you're not trying to turn, you know, managers into therapists as part of the academy programs, you are trying to build those competencies around mental well-being. So can you share a little bit about what skills, knowledge, and capacities the academy program helps leaders gain?
Yeah, you know, starting with the umbrella of psychological safety, right? But beyond that, it's the concept of, again, if everyone can speak the same language around mental health, the same concepts, you know, we go back into rowing in the same direction. And so the concepts we learn that you may learn is the difference between stress and burnout. How to identify it? How to identify it for yourself? You know, you put your mask on first before you help others. That's exactly the same concept. Is you can, you know, you're only as good as your own mental health when it comes to being a leader and talking about mental health. And again, going to that organizational change that takes 3 to 5 years, it starts with a baseline of mental health nutrition. That's, you know, it's so important, but it is very scary for an organization because they think of feelings, emotions, personal stories. It's just like physical health. It is the components that work up to the greater good, which is, again, creating a mental health culture where inclusivity thrives, accountability, but again, having that open door policy that, you know, you can speak up without the fear of retaliation.
We've seen L&D programs and we've seen even mental health support initiatives fail because they can't really track outcomes. They can't really point to data. They may have some anecdotal things. They may have some testimonials. They may have feedback from participants that's glowing and positive. But at the end of the day, this still has to be justified on kind of a budget line item or as a part of the overall efforts of an organization. So how does Kaya kind of measure the impact and success of those various programs?
And that's the $1 million question, right? If you think, all right, Corey, you said organizational change takes 3 to 5 years. How are you going to, you know, survive if that takes that long to provide ROI? And a lot of the problems we hear is companies can't measure their, you know, the efficacy of their vendors until either it's, you know, after or it's reactive, not proactive. And so part of our program is this continuous learning experience. So it's iterative. So as we learn a module, you are then learning about it, applying it, and then learners come back the next month or the next week and talk about what they applied as a group. Again, if the same leaders are in the same cohort, they apply the same concept that they've learned, then come back and talk about an experience. What went well and what didn't, then you have progression, then you have movement. The AI piece that we have on measuring where your company is going is a first step into understanding ROI before you even implement, you know, programs. So again, trying to take a proactive approach from a human perspective, but also measuring it as you are going through the program. And that is qualitative and quantitative feedback, case studies. How did this work within an organization? Providing just the basic quantitative feedback and reviews. And then our clinicians in the group are a big proponent and the largest voice on how did the group actually do? And is this something that is effective within the workplace?
So I would imagine that a lot of the measurement and a lot of the outcomes are a bit of a mystery for even seasoned pros within human resources or within leadership development programs or facilitating those programs, where they don't even know if they're asking the right questions. And one of the things that came up in a previous conversation that we had was, we don't necessarily think about the loss of productivity that people struggling with kind of their mental well-being generates. And, you know, absenteeism from illness, like traditional sickness, you know, infection, viral illnesses, the same effect for mental health illness, right? Or mental health struggles where people can't cope or they can't show up to work. Or even if they are there at work, maybe they're just a shell of themselves and they're just trying to make it through the day. So all of those things come back to, there is an economic, you know, incentive for all of this. It's not just do the right thing because it's the right thing to do,
right,
but also because you can actually boost productivity and kind of output as well. Not to mention job satisfaction. You know, you talk about safe places, and it's pretty hard to be productive if you don't feel like you're in a safe place or you're in a place that values your mental well-being. So
yeah.
I think all of those things come in there. Shifting gears a little bit. As a founder, I'm sure you've experienced this and you've seen this, but the, you know, startup founders in general are known to struggle with their own kind of mental health, wellness, and self-care, maybe in a wider way. Don't necessarily eat the way they want to eat. Maybe they don't get the activity they want to that they need. Maybe they're just not in the right headspace, whatever the case may be, and it gets put on the back burner. So in your experience, what are the first signs that founders should notice and maybe recognize that they're struggling with those things?
Yeah, it's something I talk about all the time. And, you know, even talking about my why I'm here with Kaya, right, is my own personal mental health journey. You know, diagnosed at a very young age, didn't have the support until I was in my 20s. And that's almost 14 years of understanding what's wrong with me. You know, I grew up in a culture where if you have struggled with mental health, there is something wrong with you versus, oh, this is just part of me and doesn't have to define me. And in my 20s, you know, mental health took a severe turn. And it wasn't until group and people that I built a community around really did save me. And that's when we realized when we started Kaya is we can apply this to the greater masses around organizations. When you become a founder, when you decide to become a founder outside of general mental health, you have to acknowledge mental health as part of the equation. You will always experience it. It is just like physical health that will impact your mental health and vice versa. It's got to just be understood and talked about as you navigate that journey. I think long gone are the days of the tech bros that join, that start companies and just power through and bang gongs and, you know, all that kind of stuff and just keep charging forward and saying, we don't talk about feelings and emotions here. You just have to sell and close. People aren't standing up for that anymore. You look at the generational shift, even to younger generations, where belonging and support and inclusivity need to be part of that equation when you come about talk about compensation and other, you know, intangible and tangible benefits. You talk about the founders, the suicides that have happened with famous founders. It exists. It lives. You know, I always say mental health affects 100% of us. We need 100% of us talking about it. And I think the pandemic has lifted the veil that it really does impact us. And being a founder is a lonely, lonely journey. And when you lead a team, I think you have to lead with vulnerability. And I try to do that every day is, hey, I'm not doing too well, or I'm struggling. I need to just take a step back and kind of rebalance. And because it goes so far and people want to gravitate towards, a workplace where they feel that they can be open about mental health struggles. So all in all, I think that it's so important for a founder. I think creating a community, talking about that, friends, family, other founders, and just calling out what's real and what's happening, because it just sets you up for success as you continuously move forward in your journey.
So it's a bit of a trust your gut. If you think you might be struggling, you probably are, or at least you should be recognizing the fact that, hey, I gotta take these feelings, or I gotta take this sense seriously. Like, yeah. You know, this is a valid thing. And I think the other point you made, which is really important, is this sense that if I'm struggling with something, that somehow I'm broken, right? As opposed to, no, this is just part of who I am.
It's part of life. We try to say you don't have to be a patient to get mental health care. Struggling with mental health is, you know, it could be from struggling with sleep to stress to burnout to isolating to all of these concepts and components that just fall under mental health. But it doesn't have to be an extremity or an extreme to then need the support.
So we talked about all the different kinds of startups in the mental health space. that have either, you know, really leaned into tech or maybe just were tech adjacent. But as you look at kind of mental health technologies and innovation moving forward, where do you hope to see kind of the market move?
Yeah, I think if we kind of segment it out, like AI and medicine and mental health is fascinating, right? There are companies that allow you to do, you know, take blood work and then understand what medications and antidepressants, SNRIs, SRIs that may fit for your body, your history. That is fascinating to me because it gives us more data as a patient or as a therapy goer to understand what's my trajectory as a mental health in for my mental health journey. So I absolutely love that because there's billions of data points that can really help us understand the medication, the power of them, but also finding a therapist based on personality matches. When we look at the workplace, I think technology, especially with AI, is helping streamline and make programs more effective. We see a lot of EAP programs being broken down, you know, stripped apart, saying what is actually going to drive engagement and productivity. So hopefully, you know, technology can help really simplify how you get support and care. One thing I would love to see, and it would be a dream if we could solve it, is global licensure. You know, it doesn't matter where you live, mental health is mental health. We struggle with not having enough clinicians in the United States to support the demand. It's also based on state-by-state licensure. Why can't we have a global licensure? I'm sure there's a ton of people out there that know why and will tell me. But it should really, you know, ease our healthcare system and just allow people to get support no matter where they live or where they are and just really make it more universal.
So what's next specifically for Kaya? What's on the horizon?
You know, this idea that, again, our AI system predictive analytics can be a global force in helping companies build a mental health pillar. We want to think when you start a company, when you are at a certain growth stage and mental health becomes a conversation, we need Kaya. We need the ecosystem that can really implement change, but also support humans. When we think about Kaya Care, as you know, years from now, we want to create different subsidiaries, Kaya Care, Kaya Clinics, Kaya Academy. Can we be a clinic that lives in the workplace that provides on-demand health, mental health services to all employees virtually and in person? But really what we want to do is harness the power of data while still using human-centered clinicians and to help train and really uplift and upskill the workforce.
All right. So as a Chicago native, is deep dish pizza actually pizza or is it just casserole?
Okay. So love this conversation. When was the last time you even had a casserole? That's the first thing. I don't know. I forgot. Can't remember.
Listen, I'm an Episcopalian. I have casseroles all the time.
At grandmother's house. All right. So we look at the three components. You've got crust, cheese, and sauce.
Okay.
It's all about the crust. It falls in the traditional family of pizza. Casseroles, not so much. I would argue that a casserole is more about the baking techniques, not the melding of ingredients.
Okay.
So deep dish pizza. The crust, higher pan, right? You've got the cheese and the sauce that brings together the traditional format of pizza.
Okay.
All in the crust. You go to Pequod's in Chicago, they bake it in those same cast iron pans for years and years and years. And that's what really develops.
So that's going to be my follow-up question for anybody who's in Chicago and feels like having a deep dish casserole pizza. I think everybody knows where I stand on this. But if they wanted a good deep dish pizza, where do the locals go? Is it Pequod's?
It's Pequod's. I think because there's one, I believe, in the suburbs that's in a house. It's amazing. Then they opened one downtown. It's getting a lot bigger. But I remember going 10, 15 years ago, and it's just such an experience. Family-owned. And then Lou Malnati's will always be my hero pizza. You know, you got Gino's East and all that stuff. But take some Tums before and after, and you're good to go.
What was? Did you watch the series The Bear? Did they go to Pequod's? I felt like they went.
I think they did.
Yeah. So anybody in the comments, if I just got that very wrong, please correct me. And if you haven't seen The Bear, phenomenal, not just because of the series, but also too, I think they play such great homage to kind of Chicago and kind of the Chicago kind of. You know, persona and stuff. I really enjoyed it, but I'm almost positive they went to Pequod. So again, correct me in the comments if I got that wrong. All right. So where can people find you and Kaya on the web, on socials, et cetera?
Yeah. So joinkaya.com is all about our organizational development, our wellness, and this new AI system that's coming out. We're looking for design partners that are organizations that are willing to grow and learn from us from the data perspective. We just started our new Instagram account for universities and for organizations. That's at joinkaya. We're providing now mental health services for students across all of UAB, University of Alabama in Birmingham. So you can kind of see our movement there. And then then you can always email me at corey@joinkaya.com. And then hopefully in the future, we'll be having TikTok for students to support and spread mental health awareness.
Corey, appreciate you coming out. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Matt.